You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
But the American League West and the National League West divisions are still pretty tight, but of course it's early in the season. I'm Allison Footer from MLB.com. The Giants are sitting, sort of pulling away a little bit in the NL West, and the Mariners are still sitting on top of the AL West, but still a lot of baseball to be played. Let's talk to the reporters about that. I had to check with you right before we started taping this because I wanted to make sure I had this right. So Danny Valencia hit 3 home runs in the game, in one game on Sunday, and then Chris Davis had a 3-homer game of his own yesterday as we're taping this, including a grand slam. So is this has this taken you by surprise a little bit?
A little bit, because it's not something that you see very often, let alone, you know, twice in 3 days. It's really crazy. I remember after, you know, Valencia's 3-homer day, looking at the notes, and I think he was just like the 28th player in franchise history to do it, which, I mean, you think back to how many years that goes, you know, that covers. So it's really not a lot. And then 2 days later, Chris Davis does it, and his 3rd home run just happens to be a walk-off grand slam. So there's really crazy happenings here. But it's really good. I mean, this is the type of thing that this team kind of needed. It was before that last game in Tampa when Valencia hit his 3 home runs. I mean, it was a really rough stretch for this team. I mean, they got just blown out in Boston, swept there. They had a rough series in Baltimore to start the trip. And it looked like that last game in Tampa wasn't going to go their way either, and they were facing another series loss. And Valencia comes up with the go-ahead home run, his 3rd homer. So, you know, both times you're looking at that day, and then, of course, last night, I mean, that 3rd homer for both of them, I mean, proved significant, not just for the mere fact that, you know, here's a guy hitting 3 home runs, but for the team. Both of them basically being game winners. So it just kind of livened things up around here. I think they just kind of needed it, not just because of this stretch of games they've had that haven't gone their way, but they've also been dealing with just a ton of injuries. So, I mean, pretty exciting stuff around here.
Yeah, Davis also isn't just like fluky. Since May 1st, he's had 8 home runs, 19 RBIs, and 10 runs scored. So that's a nice little trend to see. I mean, they're going to need that. Of course, we know how baseball works, and they're not going to be able to just overcompensate for bad pitching by just hitting like this every night, because it's not going to happen. But certainly to see some of these guys coming around like that, I mean, May 1st, you know, we're now at May 18th, so it's a nice little sample size that we have here, and he's really been doing very well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's pretty surprising just because of the fact that he came off the DL not too long ago, had a setback in Boston, and, you know, comes off and is just, you know, you're looking at the way he's hitting. Usually it takes players some time to get their rhythm back, their timing at the plate. And for him, it was, I mean, he just didn't miss a beat. And Chris Davis, too, he got off to a really slow start with just a ton of strikeouts piling up. And Bob Nolan was talking about that today. You know, it can kind of get in your head when you're stepping to the plate, looking up, seeing that you have a, you know, 130 average, it can be hard to come out of that. And I think, you know, adding the fact that Chris is with a new team, trying to make an adjustment, different league, different ballpark, and, you know, you're wanting to prove yourself to not just your new teammates, but fans, it can be a difficult adjustment. So the fact that, you know, we're also seeing Chris come around and him swinging the bat the way he is, I think he has 8 homers this month alone, which I believe is most in the majors. So for them two to get going at the same time, I mean, those are, you know, this team's middle of the order presence. So I think all along, Dave really viewed Valencia as their cleanup guy. So for him to get going, for Chris to get going, you know, I think it's obviously a good thing, but especially when, you know, we're seeing a stretch where some of the starters have struggled, and it's just been kind of a difficult time for everyone to kind of get on the same page. But as long as this offense kind of keeps rolling along like this, I think this team believes that, you know, starting pitching will turn around and, you know, they can kind of start clicking on all cylinders soon.
Yeah, so moving on to the pitching, Sean Manaea got his first Major League win, and I know for our analytically minded people, the wins don't matter, but it matters to the pitcher, of course. So first Major League win, that's a big deal. And he did it very convincingly, so this wasn't just sneaking through. So it was a 3-1 win where he gave up four hits and struck out three, and he walked only one. And more importantly, from a team standpoint, he gave the exhausted bullpen a break. So that was just nice all around to see that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, this guy, you know, coming off a really just, you know, disastrous outing in Boston. I know, like, I think for any player, going into Fenway Park is still a big deal. You know, it kind of carries that history, and you just kind of feel that. And I know that, you know, players going in there, especially players who haven't played there before, they want to, you know, perform well there. And so for Manaea to go in making, at the time, it was just his third big league start. And, I mean, it was like batting practice. I don't think things could have, you know, gone worse for him. But it was pretty impressive after the game, the way he handled himself. I mean, this is a young guy who hasn't dealt with, you know, much failure in his professional career, and now he's having to deal with it at the big league level. And for him that night, I remember him, you know, just kind of taking away the positives and really pinpointing what it was he had to work on. And he took those next 4 days and did a ton of work with Kurt Young, the pitching coach, and you really saw that work play out on Monday night. So I know there's been a lot of speculation as to whether the A's should send him down, just because I mean, he hasn't made many minor league starts above the single-A level. And I think there's, you know, maybe some thinking that he was rushed and he needs to, you know, go down and kind of work on this stuff in the minors. But I kind of like, you know, to see him get this chance to work on things up here just with the coaching staff that's available to him. And he's the type of guy that's mature enough to really grasp, you know, all the things that they're trying to relay to him, and he's able to translate it to the mound. And for us to see him make those adjustments so quickly really speaks to, you know, who he is as a person and also as a pitcher. So it would be nice to kind of see him stay up here and, you know, get the chance to kind of figure himself out up here, because he clearly does have the talent.
Greg, let's start by – I don't want to start this on a negative note, but I am going to kind of – but Taiwan Walker – I'm getting a little worried about our guy here. So he has not had the most wonderful May. After a 1.44 ERA and four starts in April, he's now putting up a 5.23 ERA and four starts in May. So he's allowing a lot of home runs. Should we be worried about anything at this point?
I don't think so, Allison. Maybe I'm just got the eyes closed. But I think Taiwan, I mean, he had one start, the two-inning outing when he, his neck was sore. He gave up a couple bombs in that. He shouldn't have probably been out there. They thought the neck would loosen up, and it just didn't. And then they got him out of there in a hurry. But, he gave up a couple home runs. And it came back his next game, pitched very well, extremely well, for five innings, and then got into a little control problems and gave up a grand slam. And suddenly, a really good start turned into a no decision. And then, he came into Baltimore and gave up a couple homers. Baltimore's a tough place to pitch, and the Orioles lead the American League in home runs. It's not an easy place. So, I think Taiwan, I think the huge thing we have to remember, and everyone should remember, is that he's 23 years old. And, as good as he can be, he's still working his way through things and learning, when to throw his off-speed stuff. He said after the start in Baltimore, he probably relied a little too much on the off speed and should have gone with the heater a little more. And it's an adjustment game for any pitcher, and he's kind of learning his way through that. And you can't just come out and throw fastballs. They'll jump on it. You can't just come out and throw, off speed stuff. Everybody knows that, but when you're in a game and you're kind of adjusting back and forth, it's not always easy. And he's a really talented kid. I think he's going to be very good down the road. And I think right now he's just sort of, learning the game as every pitcher does. And don't forget, he's 23 years old. He's got a whole lot of baseball ahead of him.
Yeah, and that's the other really big advantage to being on a good team, is that he's they can give him time and a longer leash. And like you said, I mean, he's young. He's obviously hugely talented. This is not going to continue most likely. But the fact that they're still winning a lot of games has to help.
Yeah, it's funny, Allison. I was looking at something today, and, you know, here the Mariners are in first place, you know, getting toward the end of May. And Felix and Iwakuma are between the two of them 4-7. And the team on the games that they've started is 7-9. And the other three starters, Miley, Walker, and Carnes, are 10-6. And the team is 16-8 on the days they start. That's pretty good. You know, if you're if your two big guns are kind of middling along and your bottom three are really carrying you, that's a pretty good sign, actually. And Walker, big part of that. And Miley also throwing very well. And Nathan Carnes has really come on. So I think that is why they're in first place without a question. You know, that the three guys, the 3, 4, and 5 in that rotation, pitching very well. And nice to see James Paxton throwing real well down at Tacoma. So pitching depth, name of the game in a lot of places. And that's certainly got the Mariners where they are right now.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't talked enough about Wade Miley. So his last outing, he had a long first inning, but then he really got into a groove. And we really haven't discussed much about him, except that he's just part of what looks to be a very solid rotation. But that's a good guy to have in the middle of that rotation.
Yeah, I mean, he's a veteran. And when they brought him in, they said, you know, DePoto was very clear. You know, this is the guy that pitches 200 innings every year, and that's a guy we need on this team, because you do have, you know, Taijuan Walker, who's very young. You do have Nathan Carnes, who's really only pitched one season in the majors. You know, you got James Paxton, who, you know, is in that mix and has had injury questions and things. And Iwakuma, you know, has been off and on with injuries over the past. He wanted a guy he could count on, you know, to be solid. And Miley's been that and really more here recently. His first couple outings really, really struggled. I mean, did not look good. Turned things around. I remember there's a start in Anaheim where he came out. I think it was his third start of the year. He came out and they were kind of jumping all over in the first inning. And it's like a light flip, a switch flipped at that point. You know, he was excellent the rest of that game. And from there on, it's just been really good. You know, he works quick. He throws strikes. You know, he came into Baltimore and you know, shut them out for his the time he was on the mound. So, you know, he's given them everything they could hope and really solidify that rotation in the middle, kind of the bridge between the top two guys and the young guys at the bottom. You know, he's kind of been the guy in the middle. It's kind of really been a big boost for them this year.
So the Mariners had a very fun game against the Orioles recently. They beat them 10-0. I think Scott Service even used the word fun when describing what he was experiencing while watching the whole thing unfold. So Nelson Cruz drove in 5 runs. I mean, teams need those kinds of games no matter. I mean, it's good when that happens when a team's not going very well. It gives them a chance to breathe a little bit. But those are always kind of good games to have when you get, you know, you get way more offense than you need, and then you get really good pitching. So that had to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, and Scott uses the word fun a lot. That's kind of been an interesting thing with him as a manager. One of the first things he told the players is, you know, we need to have more fun. You need to enjoy this game. And he says, looking back at his own career, you know, I didn't realize until I was toward the end of it that you know, I was way too serious about things. Sometimes you got to step back. And he's tried to kind of impart that on his guys to enjoy the journey, and they've certainly done that. And you certainly enjoy it more when you're winning 10-0. But they've won a whole lot of one-run games, been very good at them. I think the one 7 of their last 8 one-run games. That's a big reason they're winning as well. They certainly enjoy those. But, yeah, it's nice to get the big offense, get some points, get some runs up on the board, and roll, kind of breathe. That was a classic game, I think, to show why this offense is on a nice roll. Cano, Cruz, and Seager combining for all 10 RBIs, and that mid-three of the lineup has been really, really good. The three of them hitting about a combined 375 in May. And all three of them now, Allison, on pace for 30 homers and 100 RBIs for the season. So if you get that kind of production in the middle of your order, that certainly bodes well.
Yeah, you pretty much can. If the pitching holds up, you're going to win the division doing that stuff. Okay, so I want to end this with like a little retired number talk. I found this very interesting, the fact that the Mariners have none. And they're soon going to have one, because when Ken Griffey Jr. is inducted in the Hall of Fame, obviously he will become a retired number with the Seattle Mariners. But they have very stringent rules as far as whose number gets retired. And so far, nobody has fit the criteria. So tell us what that criteria is.
Yeah, they're pretty simple. that to have your number retired by the Mariners, you have to be a Hall of Fame consideration player, either elected or very, very close to being elected to the Hall of Fame, and spend the majority of your career with the club. That's a tough goal. Their view, Allison, is, hey, we have the Mariners Hall of Fame, and you know they're happy to put guys in that, and they have a fair number of players, and as well as broadcaster Dave Niehaus in their Mariners Hall of Fame. But to put your number up there on the wall, they have been way from the start of the franchise have set that kind of criteria. They haven't had a Hall of Famer yet, and they do have one coming up here in Ken Griffey Jr. And I find it pretty fitting that he's going to be the first player to have his number retired. They're going to do that in a ceremony about 2 weeks after the Hall of Fame induction in Cooperstown. Kenny will be in Seattle for what should be a great weekend.
TR, I don't think we need to reiterate the entire melee between the Rangers and the Blue Jays, but I did want to ask you a question about Odor's suspension. It's 8 games, which was the longest suspension of anybody who got in trouble for anything that happened, and that was to be expected. But did he feel like that was too much? I know he's appealing it. That's pretty standard. Did he feel like 8 games was too much? Did the team feel like that? Did you get any kind of vibe either way on that particular topic?
I think Odor's not really sure what's going on, but I guess he's been told that he can appeal it, so that's what he's going to do. I mean, we knew it was going to be a long suspension. I mean, he did clock Jose Bautista. There's no getting around that. And that's going to draw a long suspension. 8 games is kind of what some of the other guys have got, Carlos Clinton and some other guys. We'll see what happens on the appeal process. But if they do cut it down, I don't think they'll cut it down more than a couple of games.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've seen kind of, over the years you see other suspensions, how players handle it. They'll appeal, then they'll, drop the appeal. Like, let's say it's 3 games. I think I remember Jeff Kent doing this. So he got suspended for a few games. I don't remember what he did, but he appealed it, kept putting off the hearing, and then he, dropped it when the Astros were coming up on a relatively easy series against a bad team with a couple of bad pitchers, and then all of a sudden he dropped it. There's a little gamesmanship there. There's a little way to manipulate the system. But when you have 8 games, there's really no way to manipulate it or to find, a good time on the schedule. I mean, that's a lot. So he might just have to suck it up, right?
Oh, I think so. You know, the good thing for the Rangers is they have Jerks and Profar in the minor leagues, and they can call him up and have him play second base if needed or just back up hands or Alberto. They'll have to go a pitcher short in the bullpen. They got a lot of roster moves coming up. Shin-Soo Choo's coming off the DL on Friday, and who knows when Yu Darvish will be ready to go. So there's a lot of moving parts involved in this.
Okay. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. So I think that, I don't know, it seemed like looking at it from the outside, it did seem like the punishments were pretty fair. They got everybody who needed to be pinged a little bit, so now I guess we just wait. Okay, let's move on from that. So there's a closing situation with the Rangers. So as of recently, Sam Dyson is now going to be the closer, and Sean Tolleson is sort of being phased out for now. And so my question to you is, first of all, where do you envision him pitching? Are they going to try to put him in non-stressful situations? What's going to happen with him?
Well, I think he'll be the sixth and seventh inning guy, or maybe even the eighth inning. You know, they're kind of like Matt Bush. I could see him getting a higher profile role in the bullpen. Jake Dykeman is going to have to get out both right-handers and left-handers in the eighth inning, which he can do. They really want to limit Dyson to the ninth inning. That's pretty much his track record of effectiveness is one and done. So I think right now Tolleson's going to pitch sixth and seventh, and they're just going to have to see. They're going to have to piece the bullpen together. I mean, they lost Keone Kella to an elbow, Tanner Sheppers to a knee injury, Tom Wilhelmson had to go to the minor leagues because he wasn't pitching well. A guy who's really been good for them is Tony Barnetti. I'm sure he'll pick up some eighth inning work as well. He's been a plus for them, signed out of Japan in the offseason. I think Barnett's going to be a key player for this team going forward.
Yeah, so we should say Tolleson, he's had just a rough go of it. He gave up a grand slam to Chris Davis in a loss to the A's the other day. He blew four saves, which is like two. I mean, he had, I guess, two all of last year. He seemed to take it well. I mean, judging from his comments, he appeared to understand the move and seemed to want to just get on track and get the Rangers winning again. Did he seem to be in a good frame of mind?
Yeah, I mean, Sean's a pretty level-headed kid. That's why he was so successful as a closer last year. You know, there's a couple theories going on. One is, you know, Sean has never been a completely overpowering pitcher. And, you know, some of these teams have seen him now a couple of years and have a better idea of what he throws. You know, he got beat on the fastball the other day. He threw almost all fastballs in the ninth inning. And that was kind of curious because he has a really plus changeup. And he really didn't throw that at all, especially in the bat against Chris Davis. So I think, you know, a couple things. He's got to get his fastball location back. He's got to get his changeup back where he can keep him off the fastball. And what Sean said is he just needs to start throwing the ball with conviction again, which is something that's been missing. You know, just take the ball and throw it and trust your stuff and trust where it's going to go and not think about it too much. And that's hopefully what they're going to get him back to doing in that sixth and seventh inning hole.
Okay, there's 17 and 22, Alvin, but I just want to talk about Mike Trout for a second because all I do is talk to you about the sad state of the rotation, so I'm not going to talk about that right now. I was kind of laughing because everyone was like, you know, the first couple weeks of the season when Trout was hitting not so well, I guess through April 19th, he was hitting about 220, and so everyone was starting to mumble about what's wrong with Mike Trout. And, of course, since then, he has been on a tear. He's gotten a hit in all but four games from April 20th until now. He's a .333 batting average in May. So I just kind of want to chuckle a little bit about how insignificant, like, early season games can be. Of course, it's the only thing that we have to talk about, right, because it's the only games that have been played. But with a guy like Trout, why do we ever doubt him?
Yeah, I don't know why anybody did. That actually sounds really absurd to me. Not just because it's Mike Trout, but it's 24-year-old Mike Trout.
Exactly.
So it's not like he is beginning to enter into the late stages of his career, or he is more susceptible to injury, or he is wearing down. He is 24. I can't stress that enough. He's going to be good. He's going to continue to be good. And as the season prolongs, his numbers, barring some freak injury, his numbers will be the astronomical numbers that he always puts up because he is really, really good and because he continues to take steps forward and because he's still so really, really young. And we're seeing it now. The question about the Angels is always, can they have enough talent around Mike Trout? But Mike Trout himself should never be a question, Allison. Last time I checked, Mike Trout's wins above replacement score was greater than the rest of his teammates combined. I'm not sure if that's still the case.
Wow.
But that is a testament to how good he is, and then unfortunately it's also a testament to how maybe the Angels aren't giving him as much hope right now.
Yeah, I had to laugh because, of course, there was nothing really much to talk about in their recent loss against the Dodgers and Clayton Kershaw, except that it ended a four-game winning streak, and they did what happens a lot when teams face Clayton Kershaw, which is they lose. So nothing much there, but it was highly entertaining to watch the video of Kershaw trying to go first to third on a base hit that was fielded by Trout, and that didn't go so well at third. And it just looked, I mean, Clayton Kershaw is an amazing pitcher and a wonderful athlete, but he did look a little out of his element trying to slide in third and avoid a tag.
I don't think he practices sliding much, which is probably for the Dodgers' best interest. But, yeah, that was about as awkward a slide as I've ever seen. He ended up just flat on his back, and his feet were just spread out apart in front of him. It's funny when we see the greatest athletes in the world kind of in a vulnerable position right there, and obviously that's a situation that Clayton Kershaw never runs into. Clayton Kershaw's never trying to go first to third on a base hit to center field. But he talked after the game about how it seemed like Mike Trout was playing a little deep. And he kind of, he, give him credit, he read the situation, right?
Yep.
He thought he would take a chance. There were less than two outs. Why not try it? It's funny because, you know, the Angels, they came in with a four-game winning streak, and they claimed Kershaw just dominated them all game. Mike Trout went 0-3. I mean, it wasn't a good night for them. But, you know, we asked Mike Trout about it, and he kind of managed to smile when talking about it, because I think if there's one thing in baseball that Mike Trout really gets joy out of, it's throwing guys out, because I feel like that's the only part of his game that really doesn't come easy to him. You know, everything else, hitting home runs, stealing bases, robbing home runs, all that stuff. I mean, he could do that in his sleep, it seems like. But when he came up to the major leagues, the only question that people had about him was kind of the strength of his arm. And that's the one thing that maybe some people felt kept him from being a true five-tool player. And it's one thing that Mike Trout has really, really worked on. He never had a great arm, but he was also a kid from the Northeast who was still young. And when you grow up in that area, you're not throwing year-round. So there's always upside with those guys once they get into a long toss program, once they develop, once they grow into their bodies. And, I mean, Mike Trout doesn't have an elite arm, but he has at least an average arm, and he's got, or maybe even an above-average arm. And it's gotten so much better since his rookie year in 2012 that now, not just Kershaw, but, you know, some of the best base runners in the game, they have to respect it. And, you know, center fielders aren't necessarily known for having great arms, but I think he has a better arm than the average center fielder now.
Brian, let's talk, first of all, just about the changes. Not sweeping changes, but just a little bit of a shakeup with the addition of Colin Moran and Tony Kemp. So I guess what should we be expecting to see from them, like playing time-wise?
Well, I think Moran is going to play more than Kemp. I think Moran will get a lot of time at third, especially against right-handed pitchers. They're both left-handed bats, but I think we'll see Kemp play more of the Preston Tucker role, coming off the bench, playing a little outfield, maybe starting two or three times a week. But unlike Tucker, Kemp, and we saw that last night, Kemp can pinch run, and he came in and pinch ran last night and scored what would have been the winning run had the bullpen not blown it in the ninth. But, you know, it's going to come down to performance, and if they both hit, I think they get more playing time. But I think we'll see Moran as more of a regular at third, maybe Valbuena playing some first in those situations, and Kemp sort of as a backup getting a start here and there.
Yeah, because I think what the Astros have maybe the worst production at third base in the American League. I have to check that stat, but like really, really abysmal number. So it can't hurt, right, to just try somebody else?
Yeah, it can't hurt. I mean, the numbers, yeah, they're by far the worst production. And that's, you know, third base is one of the positions you look for to get a lot of production, especially power production. Now, Valbuena had five RBIs the other day at Boston, but that just matched the season total, so he hasn't been doing a whole lot. But Moran's numbers at AAA weren't, you know, great. They weren't bad, but I mean, he's not a guy that's going to hit for a lot of power, but he's pretty steady, doesn't strike out much, hits some line drives, that sort of thing. So, you know, don't expect him to come up here and be mashing, because that's not what he's going to do. And, you know, they really don't need that. They need someone who can put the bat on the ball and make hard contact, and that's what they're hoping they can get from him.
So let's talk about Carlos Gomez a little bit. He went on the disabled list recently. I mean, of course, he's got sore ribs, whatever. But that game in Boston, that final game, that he basically cost the Astros a win, more than likely, by just totally missing a pretty easy fly ball. It's clear that some of this is in his head, and it's not getting any better. It is kind of baffling just how bad things had gotten for him, considering this is a very good baseball player, and let's not forget. But this entire season has just been just a mess for him. So I guess this will give him some time to maybe get his groove back and get his head on straight.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's probably the silver lining in the whole thing, is that he can take a few days off. He's not here in Chicago. He's back home, so he can take a few days off. And then he can go to the minor leagues and do a rehab that's probably just as good for him mentally as it would be physically. But, yeah, that Sunday in Boston was absolutely rock bottom. I mean, you know, another hitless game, and then, you know, he lost the fly ball to the Sun, and then the other one where he ran over, called off Springer, and then just didn't catch it. And then after the game, you know, you really had to feel for him. He was like, I'm playing brutal. I cost us the game. Every time we lose, I cost us the game. And, you know, whether he's how bad the injury is or not, you know, who knows. But I think it was clear he needed a break and he needed to get away for a while. And, I think that's probably a secondary benefit from this whole thing. But, you know, having him gone for a couple of days, clear his mind, and then he can go in a less stressful environment, go to Corpus Christi or whatever for 5 or 6 games, try to get that swing back and just try to get some positive energy, maybe come back refreshed, because it was spiraling downhill and it really hit rock bottom on Sunday. And you could tell by talking to him that it had really gotten in his head as well.
Yeah, it's hard to see that when you see a player who's mentally getting beat up by the game, because it's just so hard to overcome that. Physical injuries happen, and these guys are, you know, strong. But when you get to the mental part, that's where it's really tough. Now, on the flip side, a guy who looks to be a disaster with everything, including mentally, it looked like he was getting to him. That's Ken Giles, and now he has been pitching a lot better. He looked really, really good in that first game with the White Sox. He's still, like, coming in as a seventh-inning guy, and they need him to be a closer eventually. But certainly his pitches, his stuff, his location, I mean, he seems to be getting it together.
Yeah, he really does. He's got, I think, now 7 scoreless appearances in his last 8 outings, and he was electric last night. I mean, he was 99 with his fastball. He had the hard slider. Struck out Abreu with a slider. I mean, he faced 2 batters, but he was unhittable. And talking to him after the game, he just seems like a different guy now. He was smiling a little bit. He seemed more comfortable. His velocity's up in his last 4 or 5 starts. The previous 4 or 5 starts, he was, I think, around 94, 96. Now he's 97, 99. And so whether he's more comfortable, he's ironed out his mechanics, whatever it is, it's working right now. And, you know, Luke Gregerson has blown 3 saves here lately in the last week. And, you know, I don't think they're close to making a change at closer, but if Gregerson continues to struggle and Giles is going out there and mowing down batters like he's doing all of a sudden, I think we could see that change at some point. But I think for now we'll continue to see him in the seventh inning role. He came in with the bases loaded on Tuesday and got the job done. And then Will Harris continues to be Mr. Automatic in the 8th inning. So as of now, I think the bullpen stays the same, but Giles pitching well is a huge sign.